few people coming in, so I'll give the usual announcement, which is that this is the ongoing meditation class. For those who are coming to the introduction to meditation class, the series of four lessons, that is for beginners in meditation, that class is being held in the room to my right. In other words, as you come in here, you pass the room before you get in here. That's the beginner's class in meditation. And that's run by Dennis. The last time I went past, he only had three people in there. So if anybody wants to do some loving kindness and make him feel good, if you want to go in there and help out, that might be nice. But anyway, this is the ongoing class where we meditate for about 45 minutes. So welcome everybody. And the reason we have two different classes is because it gives me the opportunity to say some deeper things about meditation and for the people in here to be able to sit for longer periods. I know that sometimes people ask that question, how long should you sit meditation for? And it really depends just on basically how much time one has and also how one feels. Often that we don't really know how much time we want to meditate for. So it happens often if you do have the opportunity, the time, you can keep sitting there for longer periods. And as you sit there for longer periods, you often find you can get deeper and deeper and deeper. Of course, sometimes it's like the body says it's had enough and you want to come out of the meditation. If so, just get up, open your eyes and leave. Or often, what sometimes people do, when they started meditating, they get to a stage and they think, oh, nothing has happened, I can get out of meditation now. But be careful, because a really good question to ask is, if I come out of meditation, how will it feel? Will it feel better or will it feel worse? When sometimes you realize it's just going to be more peaceful, more beneficial to keep on meditating. So sometimes you can just close your eyes and meditate a few minutes longer. And sometimes that few minutes is more than a few minutes. It gets to maybe half an hour or longer. So the time you want to meditate, please be careful and just often just play it by ear. If you're feeling good, then carry on meditating. If you're a person who meditates a lot, and you know you're a skilled meditator, then sometimes you can meditate and just go on for long, long periods. If that is the case, then it's the opportunity just to keep on meditating. It seems the longer you sit for, the deeper you can get. And you can have a very beautiful time. But if there is some appointment you have, some you have to do afterwards, then the way to almost define your meditation time is as you sit down, as you close your eyes, you make what we call a resolution. And the resolution would be, I will meditate for an hour or an hour and a half or something. And then when you make that resolution, that's how long you're going to sit for, it's amazing that you can sit down, meditate for that long, and you finally just come out 1 minute or 2 minutes either side of your elected time. It happens automatically. It's a weird thing that the mind has got its own clock, as it were. And as long as you tell yourself how long you want to sit for, then at the end of that period, you just come out of your meditation almost automatically. So that's actually how we do things. But you only carry on meditating if you're enjoying it, if you're having a good time, if it's peaceful. And it's a bit of a shame to come out of the meditation if you're having a very good time, getting more peaceful, and you have to come out because somebody rings a bell or rings a gong. That's one of the reasons why I try and avoid ringing gongs whenever I can. And if I do have to ring a gong, like at the end of this meditation period, I will warn you, first of all, the meditation's almost over now. We're going to come out of meditation soon. And those soft words mean it's possible to come out of meditation gently. Remember Ajahn Chah used to say that coming out of meditation can often be like pouring hot water into a cold glass, and sometimes the glass will crack. Just like in our meditation, if you come out too quickly, it's sort of quite jarring and unpleasant. So because of that, I try to make sure to lead you out of the meditation quietly, gently. And that means that it's not so much of a shock. But anyway, while one's in the meditation, often one does not really know how deep one has gone. The reason for that is because you're right there, it's peaceful, it's quiet, and sometimes people don't notice what's missing, what's disappeared. And that's one of the reasons why that at the end of the meditation, when I say how you feel, one of the nice things to be able to know is what has disappeared, what has vanished, what has gone. Don't look at what's there, but like be more aware of what's not there. Because when you notice things which have vanished, you know, that's much more powerful to grant you insight and understanding what this meditation is. You know, things like knowing what the present moment is. It's a hard thing to explain, it's just right here, right now. But, you know, what is that? It's when you look and there's no past, there's no future in your mind at all. You're just right here in this moment, being here. And there's no vestige of the past or future. And you're content there. So you notice it because something has vanished. You notice sometimes that even the thinking has vanished, you're silent. And there's no even urge to describe things in your mind. There's no need to figure things out. Here you are, you've got a clear mindfulness, you're knowing this moment, you're being here, but there's no what we call inner commentary. Those inner commentaries are words which go inside of our head trying to describe things. Sometimes that is totally inaccurate. If you want to find out how it's inaccurate, you can just see this commentary to a cricket match. And if you can tune into the Australian commentary of Sri Lanka versus Australia, that's totally different than the commentary if it is coming from a Sri Lankan commentator. And just that's why that all commentary is always going to be biased. And that's one of the reasons why all those thoughts which go on in your head about how your meditation is and how it's going, they're kind of untrustworthy, they'll be biased. Why do you need a commentary when you're actually seeing the match, seeing the action for yourself? So that's one of the reasons why when we are meditating, inside, no need to say anything about what's happening. Just observe it, be with it, be at peace with it, and just know it. And just making peace, you know, in that way with whatever's happening, you'll be surprised that over the minutes, the mind starts to get more peaceful. And then you start to recognize there's all this involvement with the past and future and all this commentary, this inner speech, which is one of the biggest causes of lack of peace inside the mind. So what we do, we put all that aside, as I mentioned, until the very end of the meditation. When we get towards the end of the meditation, and when I say the meditation's finishing soon, that is the moment when we start using our naming, if you like. How do you feel? What is this like? What worked? What didn't work? Why did it work? And then we understand more and more about this process of meditation. And we find the more we get out of the way, the more we let things be, we know what letting things be mean. the more we just open the door of our heart to this moment and every moment and don't react to it, the more the mind settles down. It's like letting sort of a hot stove cool down, or letting nature just, I was going to use the old simile of the water, letting the water become still by just putting it down and leaving it alone. Instead of just putting it down, is it still yet? No, it's not still, no, it's still not still. I have to do something else. Not interfering with the process, letting the process be, and waiting. And you know that every moment when I do not touch that glass of water, the water becomes more still, more peaceful, more calm. And then because things don't move, because that you're not reacting to them, you soon find that the water vanishes. When things are still and they don't move, the brain doesn't notice it. Same way in this room here. Whatever sound there is here, the wind blowing the trees outside, after a while, it becomes like background noise. You do not notice it at all. That is the same with everything else in the mind. When you're sitting here comfortably, the body disappears. There's nothing happening there. And soon you become very, very still and very, very peaceful. When the body disappears, the sense of freedom, like all of the busyness, has vanished, has gone. And then you're perfectly aware and having a wonderful time. So that's just a quick introduction to some of the meditation. Sometimes, honestly, I don't mind too much what I say, whether it's profound or not profound. The point is that I've got you focusing on something for 10 minutes, and it's a nice introduction to the process of meditation, when you're going to focus on your inner world rather than the speech of a monk. So let's get going. If you like now to get your legs in a decent position. If you're on a chair, it's pretty okay at the moment. And when you're ready, to close your eyes. With your eyes closed, please be aware of your body, how are your legs feeling now, and I do this body awareness scan, even though right now my body is pretty at ease. My tendency is to skip through it and go straight to the feeling of quietness inside. But I'll just notice how my feet feel. I'm making a connection between my brain and the feelings in my feet. And once you have that connection, then you give this kindness. Are my feet comfortable? Can I make them more comfortable? And you start to relax the sensations in your own feet. You feel them getting more at ease, more comfortable. Then you, when your feet are comfortable, relaxed, at ease, I mean really at ease, and you move your attention upwards to your ankles, I feel sensations in my ankles. I'm aware of them for a few more moments. I'm just watching them become more at ease. I thought they were at ease already, but now they get deeper into peace, into comfort. As I move my awareness up my lower legs, feel the skin, feel the muscles in my lower legs. Making sure that all those sensations and feelings become more at ease. Sometimes just noticing them, being aware of them, and giving them kindness. I care for you, muscles, skin. And I can notice the feeling gets more at ease. I don't change posture. I just take off any fear, any reaction, overreaction, until those legs get really at ease. Go to the knees, relaxing them to the max. Because I've been doing this for years, I notice the sensations in my knees are different than any other joint in my body. And I know how to take that first impression of how they feel, stay with it, give it kindness, and just observe it get more comfortable. A more delightful feeling. As if any muscle or ligament or whatever which was tight is loosened. So the knees feel at ease. Do the same thing when I go up my thighs. Aware, kind, and relaxing all the time. And don't move my thighs. I just give them kindness. And things inside relax. Out to my butt. And today, just sitting on the cushion, it feels already more relaxed than last night when I sat down here. It feels more peaceful. I still stay with that feeling of the butt muscles being compressed against the cushion, making it as comfortable as possible, and then leaving it alone and going further up my body to my waist. I always tend to give a straightening, stretching of my back. And that also eases the sensations in my waist, so they too start to relax and they feel good. And I go up my body inside, out the digestive tract usually, making sure there's no aches or pains or tightness, no congestion anywhere. If there is any feeling, any even slight feeling, I stay there. Just be with it. And just kindly being aware tends to, for want of a better word, reassure that part of the body. It doesn't need to tighten up. It can loosen and feel more peace, more relaxation. I can move further up my body. To my stomach. Easing any tightness. Relieving any aches. Simply with kind awareness. Sometimes I imagine an invisible hand coming from my mind. And just stroking any area which is tight. To relieve the tension and bring that part of my body to a state of peace and comfort. Keep going up my body to my lungs, heart, and all the other organs in my back. Relaxing everything as deeply as I can as I pass through. Till I get to my back. To my shoulders, I meant. And I often notice this tightness in the shoulders. So imagine those muscles being pulled apart, and I let go on both ends, on both sides. And I know I've let go and relaxed those muscles because the sensation in those muscles changes. It feels different, more at ease. just to relax them some more so I continue on. Just with my shoulders. Until you relax them as deeply as you can. I go down my arms. Past my elbows. Bringing ease and a sense of no tightness as I pass by my elbows to my forearms, to my wrists and my hands. As you do this, you are learning how to let go. People often ask that question. How do you let go? You're learning the answer. Because as you sweep your awareness down your arms and past your wrists into the hands, if you do the kindness with it, you can actually feel the body becoming more at ease. Any tightness, any squashing or stretching being relieved. And you realize after a while what you are doing is letting things be. Letting go of that tightness which comes from a little bit of fear. You're not controlling. You're letting these things be. You have awareness and kindness which facilitates what people call letting go. And then I go to my shoulders and neck again. My neck sometimes gets tense because my head is too far forward or too far back or to the side. So I often move my head around now until I feel it's well balanced on top of the neck. When it is, my neck feels good, and I move to the last place on my body, the feelings on my face, on the muscles around my eyes and my nose and my mouth. And I deliberately let them relax. To take away any squashing, any stretching. I feel that now around my eye muscles, or the muscles around my eyes, rather, loosening them. There's one thing about when you relax the muscles, it does feel pleasurable. And it helps me relax those muscles even more. So those facial muscles feel totally at ease. And I go to the whole of my body just to check in out I haven't missed anything. I haven't passed by some parts of my body too fast. Experience the whole body sitting here, relaxed to the max, at ease. And I don't rush past this point, I linger here. because I've noticed and now it's happening for me again. When you are relaxed, the whole body feels this delightful feeling of relaxation. It's a pleasant thing to be aware of, but also it takes me deeper into relaxation. It's important to have a very, very relaxed body when you start meditating. So now I naturally, my body is at ease. It's not demanding any attention. So I can let it go and start going towards the mind. Peace. Silence. So say every week, how peaceful am I? That just makes contact my mind and mindfulness, especially with the quality of how peaceful am I. And I know the cause of peace. Being here right now, not being concerned at all about the past or the future. You don't find peace in the past. The past cannot be resolved. It's done. All you can do is let go of it. The future is being made right now. So we learn how just to be right now. Be aware, be at peace. And the second thing which enhances peace is the silence. You stop giving things names. And I also will be silent now. My mind refuses to speak. It's getting close to the end of the meditation now. How do you feel? In your mind, did you have peace? If so, how deep and refreshing was that peace? How joyful was it? And when the peace starts to disappear, how does your body feel? Sitting still comfortably for 45 minutes. Going to ring the gong 3 times. Please listen to every sound of the gong. When the 3rd ringing finishes, come out from the meditation. Excellent. So, have we got some of the questions from overseas? No internet questions. There are. Any questions from the floor? Yes, over there.
I'm just wondering if something keeps on playing back in your subconscious mind, that are like suppressed feelings that have manifested for years, would it be right to journal it down and speak to that person and just let it out, or is that still living in the past?
Yeah, it's much better just to totally ignore it, give it no importance compared to the present moment. Because otherwise it's like once the past has dangled a bait that you can somehow solve those problems. And you bite that bait, it pulls you away from peace, like fishing in the river. The fisherman's got you now. So it's best not even to bite that sort of old memory. Leave it alone. Let it go. Be free. That make sense to you?
Yeah, it does a little.
Okay, good. Got the internet questions? Thank you. Okay, here we go. from Maria. When sending kindness to world, specific groups, etc., LKM at times, I don't know, brings me such great sadness for the suffering of people. I feel I'm doing it wrong and ununderstanding. Please comment. It's sometimes when we're sending kindness to others, remember not what a person is starting off with, but what happens after one has given the kindness. One improves the state of the world. And someone was just telling me after lunch today, I made a comment about a experience I had when I did visit India on pilgrimage, and they also took us afterwards down to the Ganges in Benares. And on the way back from the boat to the bus, we passed a lot of very poor beggars, and they were suffering from leprosy. And I mentioned to this person, and they sort of said how much it meant to them. And I said I felt sad and frustrated. I had never had anything to give to this poor beggar. But then I got the insight that I can still give him a hug. And so the white monk and the Indian who had leprosy, we just hugged each other. And I saw this wonderful smile on his face. And he obviously had received that little act of kindness which a monk could give him. But nevertheless, you can experience sadness. There's so much problems in this world, and sometimes there's nothing much we can do for it. But you can always like give an emotional support to people, and to people to know that you are caring for them. It does make a difference. Just as I said when I started meditating, you know, you're looking through the muscles and bones in the body. I can't give it an injection or take away some pain or give it more blood or whatever, but I can always give it kindness. And when I give my body kindness, it's like this, it receives it. And it becomes more easy, more at peace, more calm. And even that you feel that if there was some great physical problem there, you can heal yourself because the body relaxes and accepts that kindness. And it allows sort of, I would call healing energies to flow to the different parts of the body freely. You're not blocking it off. So you can get sadness, but if you just stop with that sadness, you're not helping anybody. Instead, when you have sadness, let it generate kindness. When you generate kindness, you can make a difference. So, the suffering of people, yes, they're suffering, but one of the things we can always give them is the kindness from our own heart. And it has a huge effect. Next question is from Bulgaria. In the deepest meditations, even the mind stops temporarily. What causes a mind to come into existence in the first place? How many minds are there? Can they all nibbana someday? How many minds? We haven't done a survey of all the minds sort of in the universe. Because it's also, once you understand what a mind is, a chitta is, it's also, you know, those minds are in little animals, in things like ants, and even in sort of invisible beings, you know, ghosts, and heavenly beings. You cannot say just how many there are. And that's not really the problem. When we try and control or quantify things, the usually next thing once we quantify things is to control them. That is why governments like to do surveys. When they know how many people there are or something, then they can just have more power over people. So It's the same once you know how many minds there are, you think you do. It's just one extra thing which is unnecessary to bother you. How do minds come into existence? That's another interesting question. The only answer I can give is something which the Buddha said, was that, you know, they have things even like plants who have a very rudimentary form of consciousness. They don't have that sense of self-awareness, but they can, as you say, evolve. And I remember the little biology which I know, that there are some plants who are halfway between being plants and animals. You know, things like the old Venus flytrap, which eats animals. And so you can't really say there's a strict line between plants and animals. Maybe those things can reincarnate from one to another. And maybe from animals, obviously, to humans. Certainly you know, if you've lived with animals, you have a pet, that some of the characteristics of animals can be very close to the characteristics of human beings. And if you don't believe that, maybe I should get on the internet more. Strange thing to say. But I do remember being shown that video of Alex, A-L-E-X, the parrot, who could speak English. He had enough language to be able to have a conversation with you, which was weird. And this was not a fake, it was not sort of special effects, it was real. And that sort of started to make you wonder, the separation between humans and animals is not as distinct as many people would think. But nevertheless, you can see how beings can evolve and devolve from one stage of existence to another. Where they first come into being, it seems to be what the Buddha said, was like plants. Anyway, you can argue with the Buddha on that one. And can they all nibbana someday? The answer is yes, each one can, but many may not. Like each one of you here, can you, each one of you, attain nibbana one day? And the answer, yes, it's possible, but most of you won't. Anyway, the next question from Germany. Can you please define and elaborate on the term contented as used in meditation? The definitions are always fraught with problems because many of these words and these concepts are not so solid that you can define them like a lawyer or a philosopher defines them. But you can get a pretty accurate understanding of what they mean. Contented as used in meditation. In German, the translation does not fit right. What is it really? Contented is when you are happy with what you have to the point you don't want anything else in the whole world. The contentment is the opposite to wanting. There's two possibilities for a person not to want anything. One is that they're dead and unconscious, so the wanting is turned off. And the other one, you're still alive, but you are happy where you are. You are what we call contented, and you don't want anything else in the whole world. You're really at peace being here. So that's the definition of contentment. So the end of wanting, and you're still aware. Next question from Germany. How important is the gender in meditation? And the answer is it's not important at all. It does give some advantages, but those advantages are really temporary. This is just from my own sort of anecdotal experience as a meditation teacher over many years. And I say this, and I think it's kind of accurate. It does seem to be, on meditation retreats anyway, the females tend to get deeper meditation than the males. And I'm not being sexist or gender discriminatory, because it seems what happens next is the males tend to use those deep meditations to get wisdom faster. They basically catch up with each other. So in the end, there is no distinction. Gender is not important. Why isn't it important? Because in meditation, we are developing the mind, the citta. And that mind is not male or female. The brain is conditioned by your gender, but the mind is not the brain. And that mind would be the mind you had in your last life, the life before it. They are connected. Not the same, but not different. So the mind is not gender specific. And that is what we're developing in our meditation. So that really does mean that the gender is not at all important when it comes to the deep insights and the freedoms of liberation. Next question. When I meditate alone, I am not able to feel as much peace as in the group. How to make individual meditation more peaceful? I think if you do more individual meditation, and especially if you can make a place in your house or wherever you live, you know, like, you know, I made that cave for myself over in Bodhinyana Monastery. It's a brilliant place to meditate, simply because you can close those doors, there's no sound, I don't have to go out, I haven't got any windows, you don't know whether it's night or day. So you can be in there sound-free and time-free. I never actually mentioned that much, but when you meditate in a cave, you don't know what hour it is. And even the temperature, it always tends to be the same. As I mentioned, I think, one talk the other day, it's been 22 degrees centigrade for the last month in my cave. Hasn't gone up, hasn't gone down, which is very nice. So what that means is that, you know, there's a sense of peace and stillness there. This constant place of quiet and ease. And it's that constancy, that's stillness where nothing changes, that allows things to turn off. In a cave, my cave, I call it my cave because other people have meditated in there, but I usually say please, and I leave that for Ajahn Brahm to sit. And so in that cave, that things turn off very quickly, and even the sense of time vanishes. Which is wonderful in meditation. We are sometimes tortured by time, never having enough of it, always having to rush off somewhere. So this is wonderful when you meditate alone in a nice quiet place, comfortable just for you. But anyway, you find that quiet place, make it very lovely for yourself, and you find, I find anyway, I prefer meditating alone than in a group. When meditating alone, like even today, I'd have gone on much longer. But meditating with others, you have to tell yourself to come out of the meditation and ring the gong. Next question, Nim. If there is something that is bothering me about my partner, or I feel some sort of sadness or annoyance, should I let it go or should I address it? any annoyances which you have, say to parts of your body when you are meditating. One thing which I encourage people to do is to, first of all, just ignore it. And often if you ignore it, it just disappears. Beginning of the meditation, just a fly was crawling on my face. I just ignored it and it disappeared. I don't know what it did. So often, any irritation in my body, I ignore it, first of all. And if it keeps coming back and bothers me again, I ignore it a second time. And the third time, I ignore it again. If it comes back the fourth time, then I focus on that irritation and just let it be. In other words, I don't try and just go back to something more peaceful. I'm with that and just give it peace, relax it. And if that sort of disappears, makes it better, fine. If it doesn't make it better, a second time I just make peace with it, and a third time I make peace with it. And if that doesn't work, then I try and do something about it. Which usually I don't just disturb my meditation that easily. And then if it's like the same with a partner, something more solid in this world, sometimes something is annoying you, or is it annoying you, or are you annoying it? Remember what you often say, that great wisdom of Ajahn Chah, when there was very strong noise coming from the village, they were partying. And myself, when I was in this monastery, weren't getting any sleep at night. The party would go on till about 2 o'clock, 2:30, and that's when they would get tired and go to sleep. And then for the monks, the bell would go at 3 a.m., so we hardly had any sleep at all. So we complained to the villagers. They didn't take any notice of us. So then we complained to Ajahn Chah. And Ajahn Chah gave this wonderful piece of advice. It's not the noise disturbs you. It's you who disturb the noise. And of course, I didn't like that response at all. But then that made me remember it for a long time. And so often, that's so true. You know, during every Friday evening, there's always somebody who starts to snore when they meditate. And after a while, you just don't disturb the noise. It's not a big deal. And then the intensity of the noise decreases enormously because I'm not disturbing it, letting it be. There's so much of life, even your partner's sort of stuff which irritates you. Are you exaggerating that? A lot of time you are. So don't disturb your irritating partner, and then the irritating partner does not disturb you. That is actually very profound, and it works much better than trying to solve the problem. Okay. I also want to say thank you very much. I discovered your talks a year ago, and you've helped me so much more than you'll know. Thank you. Okay, any other questions which anybody has before we finish off for today? Going, gone. Okay, well, thank you for coming. And now we can bow 3 times to Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha, and then we can see what happens next. I do have a couple of visits after this, so haven't got too much time. If you do have something important to say, then you can come up and say it. But please, I don't have too much time to chat this afternoon.